You may, according to the latest Kiplinger report, the one done just now by Miriam Cross, one of their editors, you might want to find out the newest developments for frequent flyers. Now, everybody knows what the frequent flyer miles are, okay? You get so many miles, you travel and you pay, and you get so many miles back from the airline. And for the most part, they work pretty much the same. But more and more U.S. airlines are now awarding miles. Do you know what they were? Let me ask you this. Are the miles based on how far you're flying or on how much you're paying? Have you ever asked that question? And do you know the answer to that? Do they give you miles based on how far you fly or how much you pay, how much you spend on your ticket? Well, certainly Miriam Cross knows the answer. She's Kiplinger's personal financial editor, and her resume is long and very impressive. And I won't trust me, if you're working for Kiplinger, you've got to be somebody. And she certainly is. She lived in Toronto, Canada before joining Kiplinger. A part of that, she freelanced as a fact checker for several Canadian publications, including Reader's Digest Canada, Style at Home, and Air Canada En Route, and spent a year traveling and working in New Zealand, of all places. She received a BA from the University of Toronto with a major in English Literature and is completing a certificate in magazine and web publishing at Ryerson University. That's according to her bio. Is all of that true, Miriam?
Yes, it is all true.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. I enjoyed the article. And so I posed the question, what is the answer?
So increasingly, you're earning miles based on how much you spend on your ticket, not how far you fly. At least with U.S. airlines, the discount carriers tend to award you miles based on how much you spend. United and Delta do that, and this month American will also switch over to the revenue-based system. It's really Alaska Airlines that's the last major holdout of American-based airlines that still awards you based on how far you fly.
So what they're really saying is this is going to be truly revenue-based. You pay the dollars, we give you some miles. I mean, that's what they're saying, right?
Right. So if you spend more on your ticket, if you have to splurge on a last-minute ticket, or if you're paying a lot just to fly over state lines, you're getting more miles back. But if you score this amazing $500 fare to, I don't know, Japan, then you're not going to earn as many miles as you would have in the past.
Well, from your perspective, which one is the most fair to the customer? I mean, are customers winning or losing in this deal?
So leisure travelers are definitely losing in this deal because leisure travelers, definitely like me, I'm always more interested in finding the lowest fare. I'm not going to spend more just to earn more miles. Business travelers or first class travelers, they'll actually win out a bit in this because in the past they would have earned the same amount as an economy class flyer just for flying the same distance. Now they're spending more on their ticket and they'll earn more as a result. But yeah, leisure travelers, like most of us, we're losing out here.
It would seem, and again, maybe it's not true, but it would seem that the airlines think that they can make more money by doing it this way. Or am I missing something? What's driving them to do this?
It's a way to drum up business. U.S. airlines, it's not like they have to spend so much on marketing or making it comfortable. They're already getting the passengers, and this is just a way to get more revenue.
So they make more money. Miriam, is this a win-win situation for the airlines? I mean, by giving up these seats and giving up, and they've had plenty of time, does this make money for the airlines, this frequent flyer program, or does it cost them money?
I would imagine it makes the money or they wouldn't be doing it this way.
So your position is, look, they're making money in some form or fashion. But, you know, I don't know how. I guess it must be enough of a draw to offer a ticket or offer, you know, tickets for flying frequently that ultimately it must make money for them. I just don't see how that happens when they're giving up seats that they could get full fare for.
I mean, sometimes, you know, when you're a traveler, you don't really have a choice. You need to fly places. So, you know, you have to look to other ways to earn your miles.
Okay. All right. So at any rate, Is this change already taking place, or is it underway? And if it is, how long have they been doing it this way?
So Delta and United have been doing it for about the last couple years. American Airlines, it's actually a pretty recent thing. It's this month, I believe March 22nd, that they're switching over to the revenue-based system.
All right, and parenthetically, had nothing to do with the miles and everything, can you explain to me, and we're talking with somebody who might know the answer to Miriam Cross's in Kiplinger editor. You know, Miriam, I remember when the price of gasoline was sky high. It's now down to $30 a barrel or whatever. And airlines are having a field day because they're paying so little. And yet, I read last month a couple of the carriers actually raised their tickets by $14. How's that possible? I mean, what's going on here? Said another way, is the public getting ripped off here?
I'd say with domestic airlines, yes, they are. It's World Airlines are actually just known for having better service. And a lot of World Airlines actually are still on this distance-based system. So if you can, you know, if you're flying on partner, like, you know, flying on United,
right,
if you can accumulate miles in, say, like a Singapore Airlines account, you'll definitely be getting more bang for your buck.
And again, I mean, everybody wants to pay as little as possible, I presume, except the very, very wealthy. And I know that you travel a lot. So how do you find, how do you go about finding the lowest fares? What do you do? Well, hold that. Let me just pay the bill. Let me stop, take a break. And when we come back, I'll ask Miriam, because she would know and can tell you how to find possibly the lowest fares as you head into the summer season. This is Home and Family Finance here on the Radio America Network. I'm your host, Paul Berry. We'll be right back. My guest is Miriam Cross. She is an editor with Kiplinger. The headline here, folks, is that the airlines have made a change. They are now, without question, charging or providing you frequent flyer miles or whatever they call them based on how much you spend and not on how far you fly. So, you know, if you're going around the world, don't think, oh, my God, I'm going to make a lot. No, that's not what you're going to make some. You're going to get some mileage. But that's not what they're going to base it on. They're basing it on what you pay for that actual ticket. Okay, that's the headline. Now, you're looking, and all of us are. I mean, you want to get the best possible, fare that you can get. And I've asked Miriam to consider talking a little bit about how she goes about finding the lowest fares. What's the secret to this, or is there a secret to it, Miriam?
I wouldn't say there's a secret to it. There's different ways to do this. I'm a big fan of Google Flights as a search engine. It's really fast. It's really intuitive. It ranks the flights, taking into account price and distance and stopovers. It has these like great tools to compare different dates. You can click on a calendar and see which date combinations are cheaper. You can click on a map and show which cities are cheaper. So Google Flights is a great one. You can also follow your favorite airlines on Twitter. Sometimes they'll post flash sales,
mm-hmm,
or sign up for airfare alerts with airfarewatchdog.com. Enter in your cities, and they'll send you alerts when the price hits a certain point.
Okay, so just keep an eye out. In this Google thing, you can go there and just they kind of summarize everything that's going on through their website. Is that what they do?
So it's google.com/flights,
okay,
and that takes you right to their search engine.
Okay. Well, there you have. So you should use the web to search for flights, and I think it's worth the time. Would you say it is worth the time if you're looking for bargains and deals to just search and find? What about Kayak and all these other sites that say they can get tickets free? Are not free, but cheaper tickets. Do they work?
Certainly do, and some people definitely prefer Kayak. I think it's actually great too. You might want to compare a few search engines like Kayak and Google Flights and HipMonk. If you cover all three, each one might pull up flights that the other one missed.
Okay. Now, here's an issue that you may help me with. My wife was planning to travel this month to visit our son in Thailand. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And so I bought the tickets a month ago or so. From Emirates, Emirates Airline. Then she went to have her foot checked. She had surgery in December early. And they had to, as a matter of fact, even as we speak right now, she's undergoing surgery. And I now have to go and try to figure out, because I bought a nice cheap ticket, obviously, you know, the one that says no money back, nothing. I got a note from the doctor that says she had to have surgery. Will that help me? Or what's your advice as to how I can change? I don't want money, but I just want to change to a different date without having to pay the fine. What do you think?
So you might have to pay a change fee. If you bought travel insurance, then having that note could help you get money back for the change fee. If not, you might just have to pay whatever Emirates charges for the change fee. And, you know, it's annoying to have to pay those things, but unfortunately they're just a reality of flying nowadays.
Yeah, do they care whether or not I have a note from the doctor that says she actually had? I mean, that's why I guess my question is, would a note like that make a difference? I guess it depends on the airline. What do you think?
I think it depends. I think you would have to just try your best and, you know, appeal to them and say you have the note.
Yeah.
It's always worth giving it a shot.
Yeah, just at least try see. And if they say no, I guess you have no choice but to pay the change fee or lose your ticket, right?
Right, unless you bought travel insurance, in which case they might pick up the change fee cost.
Are you said that the second time about? Are you suggesting that travel insurance is always good to have on? I guess any travel.
I mean, I'm personally a fan. It's definitely helped me in the past, but it's also a very personal decision. I know some people feel like it's not worth the risk. So I'd say it's a personal decision. For me, it's really not that much money, and you get all these benefits from medical to interruption to cancellation.
Okay. Is there one company better than the other, and how much does it cost?
Oh, my God. It varies so much. The best thing you can do is go to an aggregator such as InsureMyTrip or SquareMouth.com and, you know, type in your dates and some information. And
Miriam, you say this stuff like everybody knows how to do.
No.
Look, what's an aggregator? What is that? What are you talking about?
It's a website that it's like a search engine. It sort of pulls together policies from a whole bunch of different companies.
Oh, okay.
So you can use that to compare different policies.
And what's that called? Where would I go? Tell me again.
A couple are InsureMyTrip.com and SquareMouth.com.
Okay. And I guess the other good advice we would say to people today is book as far out as you can. I mean, that's how you really can save a lot of money, by buying a ticket for today and making sure, you know, you're traveling, I guess, when as far out as you can.
It's funny. Not always. I feel like there's definitely, I mean, you'll see articles all the time talking about a sweet spot. Maybe it's 2 months in advance, maybe it's 3 months in advance, depending on where you're flying. Because sometimes if you book way too far out, the fares aren't actually that cheap. I would actually monitor them once you know your dates. I would actually monitor them, like, you know, every couple of weeks, because they could fall closer, you know, maybe 2 or 3 months out from when you're flying versus 6 months out.
Okay. And you also mentioned that you could chat a little bit about crediting miles to partner airlines.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
So this is a good strategy for leisure travelers who, especially with this new revenue-based system, aren't going to be earning miles as quickly as they would with the distance-based systems. So Alaska Airlines is a great example. They still award miles based on distance, and they partner with Delta and with American Airlines. So if every time you fly Delta or American, you enter your Alaska Airlines frequent flyer number, you'll accumulate all your miles in an Alaska account, which will help you earn miles faster, earn status faster, and then you can get some benefits on its partners.
Okay, I got it. Okay, so there are lots you should check. Folks, I guess with Miriam, she's saying, look, check out. Don't just, you know, see what's out there, what's available, and how you can save as much money and make as many miles as possible. When we come back, we're going to talk about that pre-TSA, or is it TSA pre-Al, whatever it is. I think you want to know about it, because it can save you a lot of hassle. This is Hope and Family Finance. I'm Paul Barry. My guest is Miriam Cross. She is an editor with Kiplinger Online. And we're talking about this new kind of integrated rule with all the airlines, where they're actually now going to charge you for or provide you with ticketing with these frequent flyer miles, or whatever you call it. Not on how much you spend, not on how far you fly, folks, but rather on how much you spend that counts. And it's a little bit different in terms of how it adds up. So you should be aware of that. And you can ask those questions when you talk to the airline of your choice. I've asked my engineer here, Al Peterson, to join in with Miriam as we talk about something that impacts all of us to some degree. I don't know whether you've been flying recently, but as you know, the security system, or whatever they call it, After you get your ticket, that's one line you got to get in. Then you got to get into a second line, and that's a security line where you have to go through. What do they call it, Al? That's the, those machines.
That's before they screen you, right?
Yeah, the screen.
Hold your arms up, stand still.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And everybody, Miriam, I know you've done it 1,000 times in your trip. Mm-hmm. You go through the screening, right? You got to do it.
Yep.
Okay. Have you noticed that there's some people that don't go in the line that you go in? They go in a different line. Have you seen that?
I have occasionally been randomly pulled aside and have been able to go through the TSA pre-check line.
Do you know what it is?
Yeah, it's an expedited security service. So if you pay $85 and you have to apply, you pay $85. It covers 5 years. You get a bunch of benefits when you're going through security. You don't have to take off your shoes. You don't have to unpack all of your bags. It goes faster.
Wow.
So it's a great way to save time. I'd actually, my piece of advice there actually is, instead of applying for TSA PreCheck, I would look into Global Entry, which is the customs program that gets you expedited entry when you're coming back into the U.S. and going through customs lines. But it also frequently gets you TSA PreCheck benefits as well. So you're only paying $15 more over those 5 years, and you get all these extra benefits.
Okay, let me, now here, I consider myself not a frequent flyer, but a regular. You know, I fly pretty often.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard of? Am I in the dark here? Have you heard about this?
I haven't heard about this, but there are times I travel with ham radio equipment, and I have to take a second line anyway because I have to tell them ahead of time. Look, if you X-ray my bag, you're going to see wires, you're going to see weird electronic
right.
devices, and I'm going to save you the trouble now. Let's just move over here. Let's just go through my bag so I can tell you what I got. I can show you what I got,
yeah.
And so to me, actually, it's funny because the line moves faster. If I was standing in line, because I have to have a special search for my gear.
Sure. So it works to your advantage.
Yeah, but again, right. It does. It means I got to get to the airport, a week in advance. But still, in all.
Yeah, yeah. And Miriam, the reason I bring this up is that I've had more and more people either stop me while I'm in the line and say to me, they'll say, "How come you're not over there? You're some kind of television or media star." And I said, do you think the TSA cares about that? They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they care that Miriam Cross writes for? They don't care. So I'm asking the question, or they're asking me, how do we get into that line? So the last time I was at the airport flying out of BWI, and by the way, Miriam, something interesting happens. Every now and then on my ticket, it says pre-TSA. And I didn't know how that happened. So I went, they said, it's random. But the day that I was at the airport, they said, yeah. And you hit it right on the head. You can go in and you go online, go to TSA, Transportation Security Administration, and you can apply for this, folks. And you have to fill out this, it's about it takes you about 10 minutes to go through it. And then, Miriam, after the end of all of that, they say, okay, here's what you got to do. Where do you live? And then they'll send you to the nearest area where you can be fingerprinted, folks. You have to be fingerprinted, and you have to bring along a passport. And then, Miriam, they do exactly what you just said they do. You have to pay how much?
For TSA PreCheck only, it's $85 for 5 years.
That's right. And is that refundable?
It's not.
No, folks. No, here's the deal.
So they could turn you down?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, they can. And I want you to hear, they can turn you down. I don't think they're in the business of doing that. But if they turn you down, and you have to wait until they clear you, but if they turn you down for whatever reason, you don't get your $85 back. So just be, but on the other hand, the next time you're at the airport and you whiz through that little pre-TSA line, you're going to think that's the best $85 you ever spent. Yeah, isn't that true, Miriam? Because you can stand in that line for a long, long time. Anyway, listen, it's a pleasure having you on the show. Come back and see us again and keep us up to date on what's happening with the airline industry, would you?
Yeah, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure. Miriam Cross, our guest from Kiplinger. Al, thanks for joining in here because I can always count on you to know what's going on. Anyway, we'll be back next week with the same thing here on Radio America. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. See you in a week.